Our study tonight is out of Hosea chapter 6, 11b to chapter 7, verse 12, God's indictment for Israel's senseless deceit. God's punishment is very painful, but afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness, according to Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. This was the theme of Hosea, the deathbed prophet of Israel and the last prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel before it fell to Assyria and divine judgment. Hosea 6:11b to 7:12 describes God's indictment of Israel for her senseless deceit, and we view it for our insight, application, and edification as follows. Well, I want to read the passage first, and then we'll look at it. I'm starting at the second part of verse 11. There actually should be a new sentence there. Whenever I return the captivity of my people, whenever I would have healed Israel, then the iniquity of Ephraim is discovered and the wickedness of Samaria. For they commit falsehood and the thief comes in and the troop of robbers spoils without. And they consider not in their hearts that I remember all their wickedness. Now their own doings have beset them about and they are before my face. They make the king glad with their wickedness and the princes with their lies. They are all adulterers as an oven heated by the baker who ceases from raising after he has kneaded the dough until it be leavened. In the day of our king, the princes have made him sick with bottles of wine. He stretched out his hand with scorners, for they have made ready their heart like an oven. Whilst they lie in wait, their baker sleepeth all the night. In the morning it burns as a flaming fire. They are all hot as an oven and have devoured their judges. All their kings are fallen. There is none among them that calleth unto me. Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned over. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Yea, gray hairs are here and there upon him, and he does not know it. And the pride of Israel testifies to his face, and they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. Ephraim also is like a silly dove without heart or without sense. They call to Egypt and they go to Assyria. When they shall go, I will spread my net upon them. I will bring them down as the fowls of the heavens. I will chastise them as their congregation has heard. All right. God had said that though he wished to restore the fortunes of his people, though he wished to heal them, their sins were exposed and the crimes of their capital city and Ephraim Samaria were revealed, and it kept hindering God's renewal. It's fascinating here. God is saying, I kept looking for an excuse to heal them. I kept looking for an excuse to bless them. I couldn't find one. Their wickedness keeps popping up. A key problem behind all of this sin was self-deception. Thieves broke into houses and bandits robbed in the streets, thinking that they would not be held accountable for such actions, while not realizing that God recalled all their evil deeds, that their sins engulfed them, and such sins were always before God's eyes. The words before God's eyes mean conspicuously in front of them. It's like God says, I can't help but look at them. They're right in front of me, right there. So as much as God wanted to bless these people, he couldn't, because their sins were so immense. They were so overt. It was a problem. Well, this deceit abounded even in the nation's leadership in the capital city of Samaria, verses 3 through 7. First, by means of their evil, Samaria's officials and princes made their king glad in treachery. These leaders were all either spiritual and physical adulterers, men with a passion to disobey God like a hot oven, while the baker kneads the dough only to fire into flames of great evil passion at a moment's notice. Accordingly, on a day of special celebration, when the king was the center of attention, it could be his birthday or something, the king would carouse with his princes, mockers, who were under the influence of wine, partying with him while they were also plotting his overthrow. Apparently what they were doing, they wanted to assassinate the king, so they were getting him good and drunk to make their job a lot easier. During this period of intrigue, the princes in smoldering passion for an assassination would approach their king in deceit until that passion exploded in fury as they killed the king. Accordingly, four of Israel's last six kings were all murdered. It's interesting. This is what was going on. Meanwhile, all of Israel's kings had fallen while no one called on the Lord for national stability. The kings weren't calling on the Lord for national stability. The princes around him were not calling on the Lord for national stability. They were just doing their own thing. Sounds kind of like leaders today. No one's looking to God for help. No one's looking for him for mercy or pardon. They're just kind of doing their own thing. Well, instead of looking to God for stability in their own government, the leaders of Israel pursued stability in forming alliances with foreign nations, becoming like a cake in hot stones that is burned on one side, though not yet turned, and thus has to be discarded as useless. It's like a hot cake. You put the hot cake on and you just leave the thing there for 20 minutes. All right? You don't bother turning it. You can't eat it because it's burned on one side and it's gooey on the other. And even if you could get it off the ladle and turn it over, you wouldn't want to eat it because it's so black on one side. So this is exactly what this nation was like. This is what these leaders were like. The nation's arrogant refusal to repent, to acknowledge her violation of God's covenant, testified against her as being wicked, and she did not return to her Lord, nor seek him for all of her needs. Like a dove with little sense, and doves apparently are known for being not too very bright, Israel tried to form foreign alliances for her security, calling to Egypt and going to Assyria. What happened in history is beautifully illustrated in this verse. I mean, this verse talks about them being like silly doves. In history, under King Menahem, about 743 to 738 BC, Israel submitted to Assyrian suzerainty. In other words, they looked to Assyria as their provider, as their protector, but they had to pay dues and pay taxes and be subject to Assyria. That's 2 Kings 15, 19, and 20. The next king, Pekah, about 734, joined a coalition against Assyria, which Tiglath-Pileser III, he was a very powerful general who turned the Assyrian army into a nice machine, he violently crushed it in 2 Kings 15, 29. King Hoshea, after acknowledging Assyrian rulership for a time, stopped paying tribute and sought an alliance with Egypt, 2 Kings 17, 34, 3-4a. And this act of rebellion led to the destruction of the northern kingdom at 2 Kings 17, 4b-6. The inevitable result of a foreign policy which for 20 years had been characterized by vacillating and expedient measures. It's interesting, this thing lasted for 20 years. I was just thinking about it, 20 years in Afghanistan. What a mess. There just was not a consistent policy. They were trying to build a nation with people who didn't understand democracy as we do it. You have to understand the mentality of the Oriental mind is very, very different from Western civilization. They don't comprehend democracy as we do. Out there, everything's ruled by elder polity, strictly. And there's like one man on top and everybody kind of follows him. So what the Afghan army did, they play along with the Americans, providing the Americans provide protection. But when the Americans don't provide protection, they revert back to their original culture. And so they run, okay? Unless you're Muslim and you're fighting for the Muslim ideology, which has been around since, 700 AD. So when we were in Nigeria, we were stunned at how ignorant the State Department was of African culture. Missionaries were having to constantly go around and mop up because we knew what the culture was. We were living with the people, but the U.S. State Department there's a block there. They don't get the picture, but things haven't changed. Well, since in all of this futile foreign policy activity, Israel had not sought the Lord for her national security, God himself would punish the nation. Accordingly, as Israel sought out alliances with all the naivete of a dove, the Lord would come like a wise and well-equipped fowler and trap them. Notice the picture here. He's likening them to a dove, so he's going to be like a fowler. And they're trying to play deceit with one another, so God's going to creep up on them and catch them unaware. So God, in his judgment, it's tit for tat. His judgment meets the crime, it meets the sin. So the nation of deceivers would be entrapped by the unsuspecting judgment of God himself. So the lesson is, because of overwhelming deceit in the nation, and especially in its leaders, and because everyone sought human solutions to meet their needs instead of revering and obeying the Lord for blessing, God would entrap the nation to its surprise, entrapping Israel in his divine punishment for sin. So may we not gratify our evil passions in deceit and face God's surprising entrapment and punishment, but humbly revere the Lord and walk uprightly in honesty before the Lord and other people for divine blessing. I forget what prophets this sentence is in, but I think it was a theme verse, and we had to memorize as children at the Christian school that I attended, the day school. What does the Lord require of thee, O Israel, but to revere the Lord and to walk humbly with thy Lord and obey the Lord? Walking with real respect for God, real humility before God is very important. If we are arrogant and if we are deceitful, look out. God lays a trap for that type of a person, and he will deal with it. So we'd have to remember, God is a lot brighter than we are, and he knows our motives better than we do. The best thing to do is come clean with God, revere him, and to walk humbly with the Lord, and be honest in our relationships with other people, be forthright, and not deceptive, and certainly not taking advantage of vulnerable people by means of deception. That's something that is absolutely repugnant to God. So it's a passage that is very applicable for our culture today.